Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, welcome to the big show, and happy birthday, LeBron. I know you're a loyal viewer. Coach Mangini's stopping by to discuss how the Cowboys can extend their winning streak to 5 on Sunday. And let's talk about Aaron Rodgers, heavy favorite to win the MVP, but we're still talking about his retirement. And finally, does it behoove Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick to get the baby goat back on track against Jacksonville? Jenna Wolf is out. I'm Kevin Wild.
Is that a hoof?
That is
joke?
Nick Wright.
Did we start it's the show a, with
it's
a hoof joke?
It's
behooves. You're so
and
dumb.
And that is Chris Broussard.
America. Kevin, no,
manager and proprietor of the Bud List.
Why
Broussard.
Is this slick?
Jack, no, to, I'm not.
No,
it behooves me.
No, roll it.
Behooves.
Don't step on the reeds. Losing in Memphis. Lakers in town, looking to extend their winning streak to 2, and it didn't happen. They couldn't stop the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. Ja had 41 points. LeBron had 8 threes.
Ooh.
Went for 37, 13, and 7, and it's his birthday today.
Jesus.
Broussard, is there anything the Lakers can do to stop this free fall?
Absolutely. Get inside the time machine. I mean, really, remember all those jokes and memes about how old the Lakers were? And, oh, are they putting together the 2013 All-Star team? Guess what? They were right. This team is old, and this is a big problem. You can kill Russ. You can kill AD. You can kill THT. Bottom line is they're old. And when you're old, you have trouble maintaining a high level of play throughout an entire game. And that's why you see so many ebbs and flows with the Lakers. All right. Sometimes they look great during a game, and other times 12 minutes later, they look horrible. They have blown more double digit leads in losses than any other team in the NBA. And that is directly related to the age. So that's a problem. All right. But it is what it is. You're old and this is your roster. So barring some huge trade that probably isn't coming, here's a few suggestions for the Lakers, Nick. One, slow it down. I said this the other day, but they're playing at the fastest pace in the league. And I know, Wilds, you think old fogies should play at a breakneck speed, but I don't. All right. They can't keep up with these young teams. All right. And furthermore, LeBron James has always played slow. He's never won a championship with a team playing in the top 10 in pace. Think back to Golden State when he beat them in Cleveland. How'd they do it? They slowed it down. When Kyrie and Love were hurt in the 2015 finals, how'd LeBron keep them close? They slowed it down.
That was caveman.
All right, and
pace.
That's what they need to do. That's one reason. I'm not saying go that slow. I hear you. But I'm just saying, don't try to be the fastest team in the league because you can't. One, LeBron is playing phenomenal. But one reason his numbers are so high is because they have more possessions because their pace is faster and he's shooting more threes. So that's the first thing. Secondly, and here's the, this one's scary. But they got to try to get Russ out of there down the stretch. And I'm not saying every game,
there you go.
And you certainly don't go.
No,
you certainly don't go to the podium and announce it. All right. But just, maybe you got another team that's playing well without Russ, with Russ on the bench, another lineup, and you don't bring him in automatically with 7 minutes to go. You just leave him on the bench and surround LeBron at the end of the game with some shooters, Melo, Malik Monk. Stanley Johnson's a defender, so you throw him in there. Avery Bradley. And see how it goes. Maybe it doesn't work. But take a try, because Russ, with his poor decision-making, his turnovers, his lack of shooting, and now missing layups at the rim, You got to try something else. And that those are my suggestions.
Can I jump in there? Yeah, because Broussard's going big picture. He's going macro. I want to go micro about last night. Because the Grizzlies are, you know, the type of team the Lakers are going to have to beat in the playoffs. They're the type of team the Lakers are chasing in the standings. And I understand they don't have Anthony Davis. But last night was a winnable game. And I have not, I don't know if it's fair to say this year I've been a Russell Westbrook defender. But I certainly have not crushed him at the level he's been crushed on other shows or in other media circles. But last night was an utter and total abomination from him late. Let's just set the scene here. 6 minutes left, Lakers down one, John Morant at the free throw line, and here's Russ trying to do something good. Hey, Carl's Jr. And instead, Stanley Johnson's got that rebound, buddy, but he's crashing in, and he knocks it away from his own teammate, John Morant, bang. Okay, Russ, can you make up for it the next time down? By the way, Carl's Jr., I'm a Hardee's guy personally, but very good. Now, the very next possession.
True.
Russ. Oh, no. That's a missed layup. Can we see the next Russ possession? These are three possessions in sequence as a one-point game turns into quickly on the next time down a seven-point game. And then a couple minutes later, Wilds, LeBron cans an impossible three because he's playing brilliantly. He's got Ja in his grill. LeBron, I'll just pull up from there. Bang. Next time down, LeBron gets the defensive stop. We can show it to you. Oh, it was six. Now it's three. LeBron gets a swipe down block. Russ. Go, Russ. We don't. Yeah. Show us what Russ does with the ball here, please. Go, Russ. Go. Okay. No one's going to stop you. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, what are we doing? The Wilds. I saw someone on Twitter posit 2 days ago, does Russ have a basketball version of the Yips? And I had never even thought of that. And I'm like, maybe. I don't know. I mean, that's a layup in transition to cut it to one.
Well,
he missed a layup a few possessions prior. That's why they lost last night.
All right, so I want to dig into that. And the first about the rebound, that's just muscle memory of stealing the ball from Steven Adams when they were on OKC. That was not necessarily Russ's fault. You can't blame him for that. There's years of stealing rebounds from Steven Adams after free throws. All right, so the question I have is that, I'm going to tell you a story, Broussard. This is a quick, true story. One time I was in the Ralph Lauren store, and I'm a handsome guy, tall guy, handsome guy, big guy, impressive guy. And Jason Momoa, Aquaman, came up behind me, and I've never looked worse in my entire life. When you saw the comparison of a real man and me, I was just like, ugh, I felt terrible. That's how I felt last night with Ja and Russ. In this story, Ja's Jason Momoa. Ja tried to dunk on Dwight Howard by jumping to the top of the arena, touching the roof, and trying to dunk, and he missed it.
Yeah,
he's constantly blowing past Russ. So the question I have for you is this. You miss one or two layups, okay. But Broussard, Russ missed it. Missed a dunk on Christmas that you're like, huh, that was weird. That doesn't look like the old explosive Russ that I know and love. And then last night, he didn't just miss that layup. He did because he went up for a dunk and kind of changed his mind and went for a layup. So the question I have for you is this, Broussard. Is the fact that Russ has lost a step leading to some indecision at the rim because he's not his normal, explosive self that he was 8 years ago, let's say?
It's a great question, Wilds, and it's not that noticeable. All right, he still is playing with high energy. He still looks athletic out there. And I'm going to defend his Christmas Day miss. All right, and look, he should have made it. But he had to go around Nick Claxton, if we could show that again. He had to go around Nick Claxton to get ready for that. It wasn't highly contested, but it still wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't like he was wide open and just got hung up on the rim.
Well, he tried
it. Here it is. Like, he had to kind of maneuver around Claxton. Another defender's coming. So I don't think that was as bad as everybody's made it out to be. I'll just say that. But you have a good point, Wilds. because when your athleticism leaves you just a little bit, now you have to be a little more concerned about the defenders. Now you're a little more concerned about getting your shot blocked. Now you're thinking about playing faster because you, whereas you used to not even think about it because it was just there. Now you do have to think about it. And we all know when Russell Westbrook loses his athleticism, it's over. It's over. He's not a jump shooter. He's not a great decision maker. Very
he's
smart, you know, B-ball IQ guy.
Yeah.
Yes. When he loses his explosion, it's over. I don't think he's there yet.
And
but you have a good point that if he's just lost a smidge, it could be impacting him.
Mm-hmm. And Wilds, I love your comp, even though that was obviously a fake story that never actually happened. Jason Momoa and you do not shop
true.
The same stores. You don't run in the same circles. Okay. was my inventor friend
true.
Ryan there?
Look at
I'm
that
just curious.
Tie.
All right, Wilds is adamant that the story's true. All right, America, I apologize.
100%.
Wilds is adamant the story's true. But the reason
just you make
the
up
reason I like the comp, even if I don't believe it, is the worst part. I showed you those Russ highlights or lowlights, but the worst part was just throughout the game, Ja beating him at the point of attack with the greatest of ease you could possibly imagine. And that's been a concern for the Lakers all year. Here's the other concern. And this is why, you know, your alert level should be, you know, at a strong orange. As great as LeBron is, and happy birthday, Tiger Woods, happy birthday, LeBron. What are the odds the two greatest American athletes of all time have the same birthday? But that's neither here nor there.
Wow.
LeBron's not going to be able to keep this up. Can we see the last six games? Because the Lakers are a rousing 1-5 in the last six. Oh, look! Most points per game by someone 35-plus ever. Now you might be like, Michael Jordan is a wizard? I thought those years didn't count. No, they only count when they help him, not when they hurt him. We don't talk about them missing the playoffs. What about just overall play?
He was balling.
How's LeBron doing in that regard? Oh, wait, look at that. 30-10, 5, 1.5, 1.5. It's Kareem, Akeem, LeBron 4 years ago, and LeBron now. They're 1-5 in these six games. So LeBron is playing as well as he's played all year, as well as someone his age has ever played in the history of the sport. The other big takeaway there is Kareem was 32 in 1980. What? How long did that man play for? That's neither here nor there. Wilds, look, they're 1-5. LeBron's playing best basketball he's played in his entire Lakers run, aside from the playoffs when they won the championship. They're 1-5. It's a problem. It's a big problem. He's playing that well, and they're losing these games.
It's interesting you brought up Jordan, because Jordan with the Wizards could put up numbers but couldn't impact winning like he used to. Same with LeBron. Putting up great numbers, can't impact winning the way he used to. It's called age.
It happens. LeBron with the Lakers has not been Jordan with the Wizards. We can discuss that another time. They're not going 500.
But I'm just saying, you know I'm right. Don't get mad.
And he's not averaging 20 a game. Guy averaged 20 a game with a beer
belly. He's not 40.
This guy's old and winning. Aaron Rodgers. Now he's talking about retirement. Next on First Things First.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back on First Things First, talking Aaron Rodgers. Heavy favorite to win MVP. We didn't see that coming. But 12-3. But take a listen to his response when asked about potentially retiring after this year.
I wouldn't rule that out. You know, I think that I'm just enjoying this season for this season. And I think there's playing next year will definitely be in the thought process. One of the things that obviously, and you and I have talked about this over the years, wanting to not be a bum per se on the way out and to still be able to play, I think is important to me. I'm just savoring this year, I think, as much as anything. And I don't want to, it won't be something where I'll drag it out for months and months, you know, have conversations with my loved ones after the season, with Brian and Mark and Russ and coaching staff, and then make a decision at some point. You know, I'm not going to hold the team back from anything. And once I commit, and if it's committing, you know, to move forward here, it'll be a quick decision.
This is unbelievable, guys. Hey, Rodgers is, you know, just allegedly defrauding the state of Mississippi out of hundreds of thousands of dollars away from hitting the Favre trifecta, which is the, why is he in the media so often? Why does he need everyone talking about him and discussing him so often? And now he's hitting the, hey, could walk away. He's emulating. I would love to ask Aaron Rodgers, young Aaron Rodgers, what he thought of how it ended with Favre. If it was good for the team, if it was good for his legacy, if it was good for the organization and his teammates. Because from everything we've heard, Rodgers hated that. And now he's following, oddly, in his own unique way, the same playbook. I have a lot of questions. First of all, he's not retiring. There are a few things I am certain of. One of them is Aaron Rodgers is not retiring after this season, no matter how it ends. Whether it ends in them losing their first playoff game or winning the Super Bowl, he's coming back. But what I don't know, Broussard, is why do we hear from Aaron Rodgers so much? He's on, you know, the most watched show on television, the NFL. And yet somehow by Tuesday mornings, it's like not enough attention. It's like he's like the television starlet that is on a hit show, but then is on IG Live five times a week. Like I need more of it. Like feed my ego. It's so odd. How many times have we heard from Patrick Mahomes this year? I'm just curious. How many times have we been like, wow, did you hear what Mahomes said? We got to play that on the show. It's a weird space for him to be in. And then he does the McAfee long sit down therapy sessions, and he does these, and he's showing his feet, and he's talking about retirement. And I just don't get it. Do you think he's retiring? Do you take this seriously? I don't take this seriously. I just think it's a way to stay in the news cycle, and I find it so odd.
All right, a few things. I don't think he's attention hungry as you do. I mean, certainly he likes attention. We all know that. But I think, look, he's doing his typical media availabilities during the week. And then he does, as you mentioned, the McAfee show. And it's with a former player. It's with a friend. So he's more comfortable. He lets his hair down, so to speak. And he says stuff. You know, a lot of times if you're sitting down with a regular reporter, you really might not say real stuff. He's real on the McAfee show. At least it's, you know, he gives his true feelings, and that leads to good storylines and news. All right. So I think that's all this is. As far as yesterday, no, I don't think Brett Favre's retiring. I think the retirement talk, the reason Rodgers retiring. And I think it's because he talked in the offseason about getting in the right mental space and how important that was and how great it was for him. I think a part of that, and we've heard other athletes say it, is staying in the moment. Not getting caught up in the past, not getting caught up in what may happen in the future. So I think that's his approach. Like, look, we'll see what the future holds, but right now I'm focused on now. I think that helps him stay where he wants to be mentally. And he threw out, I never want to be a bum when I'm playing. All right, he's not going to be a bum for another 2-3 years at least. All right, so I agree with you, Nick. He won't retire. What I got from that, though, is he wants to be a Packer again next year. He talked about his growing relationship with Brian Gutekunst, the GM. I mean, he spoke favorably about Goody. I call him Goody. And he's done that throughout the season, actually. And then he said, I'm going to sit down with the front office and the coaching staff after the season to make a decision. Nick, I think when he sits down with them, if they're like, look, we are committed to you, he's going to be like, look, are you committed to me for the next 2-3 years? Am I the quarterback or are you looking at Jordan Love? I don't know that means they need to trade Love or what, but if they commit to Rodgers, You're our QB for however long you want to be. You're playing great. Two straight MVPs. We can win a Super Bowl with you. We're going to build around you. And they re-signed Devontae Adams. Then I think Rodgers is back, and it's as simple as that.
I agree with you, Broussard. Because here's the thing. I looked at, like, the other big quarterbacks who were on the move. So Stafford obviously left the Lions to go to the Rams. Great defense, better weather, better overall franchise. And, of course, the big guy out there is Brady leaving the Patriots to go to the Bucs. Better defense, better offense, cooler coach, nicer vibe, nicer weather. What team is out there, Nick, that Aaron Rodgers would look around and say, you know what, the grass is greener over there? Is it New Orleans with Michael Thomas's frayed relationship with Sean Payton?
No, it's not New Orleans.
They've got a good defense. Is it Denver's got a good defense, but do we think that is a perfect fit? I don't see the natural Brady to Bucs, Stafford to Rams situation for him out there. So he's like, huh, even if I don't love it here, there's not a better situation, a better team for me. So my options become binary, either stay or retire if I want any leverage over my future.
So I think it's a little revisionist history, Wilds. As far as nobody thought Brady was going to the Bucs until he went to the Bucs, aside from Cowherd. And I'm convinced Cowherd somehow had some inside information on that, even though he won't say he did. But I mean, no, people said the Chargers or the Titans, maybe. Nobody was looking at the Bucs as a team that was about to be this, you know, immediate super team. They didn't know they were going to get Antonio Brown, Gronk, Leonard Fournette. The defense what had been, I think, underrated the year before. But I don't look at it like that. I think a lot when Peyton Manning, pardon me, went to the Broncos, people weren't saying, oh, my God, they're going to set offensive records. People were like, oh, no, they went 8-8 won a playoff game with Tebow. And then he went there and it made sense. Like, sometimes it makes sense once the quarterback goes there. So I don't necessarily agree with that line of thinking.
That's a good point.
But I do think that I am more intrigued, honestly, as far as Rodgers' future, by Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth's comments from a few weeks ago. And I don't know if you guys remember the game. It was Sunday Night Football, obviously, because they were on the call. And they were cagey about it. It was really weird. It was like they had, you know, off the record stuff, but they were allowed to say a little bit of it because they kept dancing around it. And they were like, well, you know, he didn't tell us he's going to be back, but it was Packers Bears is what it was, because they were talking about his last game in Soldier Field. And I think that was the game. And they were like, we didn't get the feeling that this was his last time playing the Bears. We didn't get the feeling that, you know, we sure seemed like he wants to come back. And so I guess that just reiterates my point, which is not only is he not retiring, he might not even be leaving. And I find you're right, Broussard, that he does his regular media obligations. But Mahomes does a weekly interview as well with my dear friend, former intern, and now star radio host Carrington Harrison in Kansas City. Do you know why we never play it? That's my buddy is on it. I'd love to give him the pub. Because Mahomes doesn't say anything interesting. Mac Jones goes on one of those just awful Boston area talk shows every week. Do you know why we don't play it? Because, Boston talk radio is just the pits, man. You know this. You know why we don't play it? Because he doesn't say anything. Rodgers does 45 minutes on camera with the newest $30 million a year man. Shout out to McAfee. No, he's not a dumb guy. He knows he's feeding the content machine, and then evidently didn't get enough pickup yesterday or from a couple days ago with his latest vaccine nonsense. So he's like, all right, I'm checking out the headlines, not in there for some reason. Maybe I'll retire. I mean, to me, it's pretty. I mean, it's right. Like, does anyone not think that's what's happening here? To me, it's pretty obvious that's what's happening.
It's pretty good. You're hot today, buddy. Hey, we're going to move on to talk about the baby goat. Number one pick of the draft going up against the number one pick of your heart. But is he going to be on the bud list? I hope not. I'll cancel the segment before it even starts. First things first, up next. Hey, it's Broussard's
Best
under duress
moment of the
list.
Week here.
I gave you a tease. Don't put our baby goat on there. But take it away. Don't do it.
All right, Wilds, I might owe you an apology, but here we go. At number five, Kyler Murray. All right, a lot has been made about the head coach Cliff Kingsbury falling off at the end of the season, right? His teams do it every year. But Kyler's fallen off as well. They've lost three straight games, two touchdowns, three picks in those games. Now, Arizona has sewn up a playoff berth, so they've got that. He doesn't have to worry about that. But they're playing horribly, and if they're going to do anything in the postseason, they need Kyler to return to Pro Bowl form, the form that he showed in winning their first seven games. Going to be tough, though. Dallas, one of the hottest defenses in the league, and leads it in takeaways. That's duress. At number four, Carson Wentz. Nick, you are the president of the Carson Wentz Haters Club. You're president of a few of those clubs, but he's one of them. And you're not alone, though. Everybody loves the Colts, the head coach, the offensive line, the defense, Jonathan Taylor. They love everything about the Colts except Carson Wentz. All right. Carson has already silenced a lot of his naysayers by playing every game this season. This is only the third time in his 6 years that he's done that. Let's see if he continues and finishes off the season like that. But he can silence his other naysayers by going out and clinching a playoff berth this weekend against the Raiders for the Indianapolis Colts. All right, at number three, Justin Herbert. He is everybody's favorite young quarterback just a few weeks ago. In fact, somehow he beat out Patrick Mahomes as the starter for the AFC in the Pro Bowl. But now they are in serious danger of not making the playoffs. They got to win the next two games likely to make it. And they've lost the last two. He's thrown six picks in his last five games. And that started with a two-pick game against Denver. That's who they play this weekend. And last week's loss was, I'm sorry, unforgivable. You can't lose to the Houston Texans, the four-win Texans, throw two picks when you're trying to make the playoffs. All right, at number two, we got, as Wilds, I'm sorry, Mac Jones.
Come on, man.
Baby Goat, TBG, Mac 10, MJ 10, McCorkle. It seems like he's got more nicknames. I know that's his real name, but he got more nicknames in December than he does touchdown passes, all right? He started high. They won seven straight. They're 9-4. 16 tugs, as the players like to call them. Eight picks. That's it. That was great. Well, last two games, two touchdowns and four picks. He ain't looking good, Wiles. And I like McCorkle, to use Nick's term. But he's got to step it up. If he struggles against Jacksonville, then you might have something to worry about. Justin Edelman, one of your favorite Patriots legends, Wiles, he said he thinks he's hit the rookie wall. Julian Edelman, I'm sorry. One of your favorite Patriots, he said he hit the rookie wall. He could be right if he struggles against Jacksonville. All right, at number one, Baker Mayfield. Back off the COVID list atop the bud list. It's where he lives. And, you know, usually when that you hear that one player costs the team the game, it's an overstatement, right? But it was actually true last week. The defense for the Browns, great against Green Bay. The running game, Nick Chubb, great against Green Bay. They only lost by 2 points, 24-22. And Baker threw four interceptions, including one that killed a potential game-winning drive. Look, it's been a horrible year. The injuries, the underachievement for him and the team, his friend and wide receiver, OBJ, leaves him in unflattering fashion. No contract extension. It's just bad. He can salvage it, though, by winning these last two games, starting Monday at Pittsburgh, and getting the Browns into the playoffs. So, Baker, this is for motivational reasons. You top the bud list.
Broussard, this is a good list. You did a good job here. I have one revision. But first, I would like to alert the audience of something. Look at these pictures we're using. So there's Kyler pointing out, you know, hey, run there, I'm going to throw it to you. Wentz dropping back to pass. Herbert getting ready to throw a laser. Baker is tucked and run. He's pointing out blockers. The only picture we could find of Mac Jones is handing the ball off. They're like, hey, we need a Mac Jones action shot, America. And it's like, oh, well, I guess he's handing the ball off because that's all the Patriots want him to do, which is why I don't think what you said about Justin Herbert was fair. Losing to the Texans is a disaster. But they lost because the defense made Davis Mills look like a Hall of Famer and allowed, oh, God, was it Rex Burkhead? The running back to go for 100-plus yards. They ran for 190. To me, that was more about the Chargers' defense. So I would take Herbert off, and I would put an extra McCorkle picture. And here's why. I mean, because Mac, it's not just Mac on the field. It's Mac off the field that we have to be worried about. So Mac on the field right now is having statistically a year slightly worse than Tua Tagovailoa and almost identical to the great quarterbacks such as Jared Goff and what's less left of Ben Roethlisberger. Look at the numbers, by the way, of Roethlisberger, Goff, and McCorkle. And what you're going to see is they are almost identical across the board. But here's why he deserves to be on there twice. He's on there in Broussard's spot, Wilds, for his play on the field. I'm putting his football mental state under duress because we have increasing evidence from his play and from his press conferences that Bills game with three passes broke whatever mojo he had going. He was coming off his two best performances of the year. The team was rolling, and then Bill Belichick on national television made the entire world acutely aware of what I've been saying all year. We don't trust our quarterback. And since then, he's played like a guy who doesn't trust himself. So I think he deserves to be on there doubly. I agree with Baker under the most duress, but after that, it's Mac Jones by far wide.
There's nothing worse than a take that you hate going into your ear, and at the same time, it registers in your brain, and there's a little angel on my shoulder saying, it does make kind of sense, Wilds. It drives me insane. So just, I'm not, it's all right. But when he goes toe-to-toe with the number one draft pick, with a guy that was a can't-miss guy, hadn't seen a prospect like him in decades since young Peyton Manning, I want everyone to bring multiple bouquets of flowers and lay them at Mac Jones' hooves or my feet. Say, Kevin, you were right. He is better than Trevor Lawrence. I am putting Joe Burrow on the list. And there's nothing I want more on God's green earth than for Joe Burrow to light up that Chiefs defense. Oh, it makes me so happy. And the reason, Broussard, I'm putting him on the list is because he had 525 yards against the Ravens. Set the Bengals record. And they said, hey, Joe, when the Ravens coaches said, hey, don't fit him for a gold jacket just yet, did that upset you? And he was like, yeah, that was a little bit of motivation. So I said, oh, if that guy can throw for 525, if Ravens coaches are saying he's not ready to go to the Hall of Fame yet, imagine what he will do if I put him on the bud list. So I don't think he's playing at all poorly, but I want to give him a little bit of extra motivation to beat the Chiefs. It's a twist on the bud list. Yes, badly.
Well, Wilds, you hit on something because Nick's motivation was for the Chiefs as well because he doesn't – remember, who's the team he fears most in the AFC playoffs? The Chargers. And he knows the motivational powers of the bud list. He doesn't want Justin Herbert getting motivated. How in the world does Herbert not deserve to be on the list? All right, they've lost two straight. I get it. They put up 29 against the Texans. But if the situation calls for it, get more than 29 against the Texans. They give up 27 on average. Get a little more than that if you're really that guy. You don't want Herbert playing better and winning down the stretch and getting his team in the playoffs and facing your Chiefs. That's why you don't want him on the bud list.
Correct,
I get it.
Actually.
It's a smart move
that's
by
absolutely
you.
Absolutely correct.
And Wilds, good explanation on Burrow. I was wondering where you're going because he's been playing great football. Even better
than
Herbert.
He's playing great. I just need to get him a little bit
you
of extra.
Like that.
600 yards against the Chiefs. 525 Ravens. 600. 600. Hey, it's medals time. Oh, you never know. Zach LaVine. Bulls are playing great. Didn't make the medal stand. Nick, who did?
Hawks stink. What a disappointment, by the way. Hawks and Knicks. I know. What a disaster season for both those teams. Bronze medal, Devin Booker. Not a disaster from them. Might be like, oh, who's going to regress this year? Not the Suns, evidently. Not Devin Booker. 38-7-5 for Devin Booker with a win over Wild's Oklahoma City Thunder. That's Wild's 13th favorite team in the NBA, if you're keeping track. Silver medal, LeBron James. Happy birthday, LeBron. Happy birthday, Tiger. I'm not calling LeBron Tiger. It's Tiger Woods' birthday, by the way. 37-13-7 for LeBron James. That could have been embarrassing. Don't clip that, America. Make it sound like I got a nickname for LeBron. It's actually Tiger Woods' birthday. 37-13-7 for LeBron. Career high 8 threes, but not enough because Russell Westbrook went full Russell Westbrook in a bad way in the fourth quarter. And then the gold medal, John Morant. Got to the rim at will, was 6 of 7 from three, shooting a sneaky 38% from three this year. Ja, my goodness, the Grizzlies are good. The Lakers currently are not. Ja gets the gold. There is the podium from last night in the NBA Wild.
Excellent work. Excellent work. And happy birthday, Tiger. Cowboys Cards, game to watch this weekend. Our friends at Fox Bet Sportsbook have Dallas as 5.5-point favorites. Coach Mangini joins us next to discuss why that's a smart bet. Wow, we got Coach
Sunday. The race for the playoffs continues on Fox with a huge doubleheader. Full slate of games with playoff implications.
Cardinals-Cowboys is America's game of the week. Check your local listings for the matchups in your area. Only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Here to break down the big game of the week, Coach Mangini. Coach, what's the game plan for Dallas to keep their momentum going against Arizona?
Well, good morning, guys. Nick, I saw you're handing out new nicknames. I hope I'm going to get one on the show. But talking about Dallas.
Oh, stop it.
Okay, Tiger. Talking about Dallas. The first thing that we have to discuss, and probably the most important thing to me, is that Dak and the offense can't self-destruct. And this is something that I looked at and explained last time we were doing a breakdown of the Cowboys, and it's the same situation. They're 31st overall in penalties, although they've gotten better. They've been 17th the last three games, but this is a team that's had mental errors, has had dropped passes, had poor passes, all those things. And Arizona is the type of team that can create problems with their high pressure defense. They're number 6 in takeaways and they're 8th in sacks. So that's the first key for Dallas and the offense, and Dak is just don't self-destruct. The second thing is a defensive issue, and it's an issue that they've gotten a little bit better at as well. They can't give up the big plays in the passing game. And they play a lot of post-safety man-to-man defense, and there's some benefits to that, but the downside is the potential for big plays, and they're 4th defensively in giving up plays of plus 20, and they're 4th defensively in giving up plays of plus 40 in the passing game. And Arizona's been pretty good at that, being 4th and 5th and plus 20 and plus 40. So they've got to eliminate that aspect of it, or at least minimize that aspect of it. And then the third thing, and this is, to me, the most important thing, and it goes back to what we talked about last week with Buffalo and New England and Josh Allen. I said, you can't let Josh Allen beat you with his feet. And this is what the Cowboys can't do. They can't let Murray beat them with his feet. And in key situations, red zone, 2-minute, third down, short yardage, that Arizona needs to use a lot of this. This is borderline, again, a playoff game. And I'm going to show you a great play and how this can dramatically affect things defensively. So here's the Colts. They're playing man-to-man defense. They're going to play post-safety man defense like the Cowboys play a lot of, where they're locked up outside, and then they've got the two inside backers on the back and tight end. The backside safety is going to go to the middle of the field. They're actually going to bring an outside linebacker and a defensive end off each edge to keep Murray in the pocket, which is a good idea. But this is great. So Murray is going to ride the back, and he's going to hard read the defensive end. If the defensive end goes up the field, he gives the ball to the back. If the defensive end goes to make the tackle on the back, then Murray's going to keep the ball. But it's all predicated off of what this player does. So you can see the defensive end reacts and goes down to the back. Now, outside, because they're in man-to-man, you lose both cornerbacks. The linebackers are going to be blocked by the backside guard, the tackle, and the tight end is going to work up to the safety. The great thing about the settle to the back is it's going to pull the linebackers over to the side that the fake is going with the back, which sets up the blocks. So now Murray's got a huge lane, a huge cutback lane, and the only player that can make this play, the only unblocked player right now, is the free safety. The back, and this is how you draw it up, but very rarely does it happen. The back was never taken down to the ground. So now his job is to work up to the second level. So he actually goes from getting the fake to working up to the free safety. And look at what a good job he does of attacking the outside shoulder of the free safety, because he's just reacting off of what the free safety is doing, knowing that Murray is bringing the free safety based off of where he's running. So he attacks the edge, seals the safety enough. Now, if they'd just done a little bit better job on the down safety, this would be a touchdown. But it's a great look at the power of these quarterback-driven runs and everything that it could potentially set up. And this is the type of stuff that he has to do in a game like this. And this is the type of stuff that Dallas has to stop and is in danger of giving up big plays in the running game because they play so much man-to-man. But key component to who's going to win this weekend.
Coach, I want to talk about the Cowboys' defensive angle on this a little further, because for as long as we've known each other, this has now been better part of almost 6 years, I think, whenever we've talked about the Cowboys, it's been something surrounding Dak Prescott and the offense. Like, we've been talking either about their coach, their owner, or their offense, and the defense's job has been just don't kill us. At this point, I think one of the reasons some people believe the Cowboys actually could break through and make the Super Bowl, a lot of people believe their better unit is their defense, that the offense is the one that can ride the defense's wave to a degree. Do you buy into that? Do you think this is the Cowboys' defense, after being so bad last year, they're relying heavily on two very young, super talented, but young guys in Diggs and Parsons? Do you buy that can be a Super Bowl caliber defense, or are you more of they're going to be able to exploit bad teams, bad offensive lines, bad game plans, but in the playoffs, that defense is water's going to find its level to a degree? How much confidence do you have in this Cowboys defense?
Well, it's ironic that you and I are talking about that, because a lot of people feel the same thing about Kansas City, right? It's their defense is going to bring them to the Super Bowl. So the nice thing about what's happening defensively in Dallas is Dan Quinn has done a really good job of simplifying things. And that was one of the issues last year is the defense had changed dramatically with the new coordinator and was more complicated. And that takes a year or two to really get going. But when Dan came in, he went back and he simplified things and really put an emphasis on playing fast, playing fast, playing fast, which allows new guys and younger guys to contribute in a more meaningful way early on. And they've gotten better as the season's gone on. I think that the defense is doing a great job, but for them to win the Super Bowl, the stars are on offense. And the stars have got to shine in the playoffs if they're going to be able to win the big games. Defensively, they're playing above their level. They're punching above their weight. But the stars are going to have to carry them through to the Super Bowl.
All right, Coach. And one of those stars, of course, Dak Prescott. And he had been struggling, obviously, since coming back from the calf injury. But last week was huge against Washington. But a lot of people, including myself, said, well, it's a mediocre Washington football team that he did it against. And you know that one of the storylines with Dak Prescott is he's been able to beat up on bad and mediocre teams. But how does he play and can he beat the good teams, which is what they're going to obviously have to do in the playoffs? So do you think this is a big test this weekend for Dak going against a good Arizona team, a good Arizona defense? And do you think that's real? You know, it's a statistic out there, but do you feel it's real? Like, you know what? I don't know if he's good enough to beat these good teams consistently.
Yeah, I think this is a great test. And for a couple reasons, it's a good team defensively, but it's also a team that uses a significant amount of pressure and a significant amount of variation in their pressure. So the offense collectively is going to have to be able to sort through that. Then they've also been very good at takeaways. They've been very good at sacks. They can force Dallas into some bad situations and into some problem plays. The issue with the offense, though, has been the unforced errors. And that's killed them throughout the course of the season. The drop passes have been an issue. The mental errors by the offensive line, the poor passes, the penalties, all of those things. Eliminate those things first, and then the Cardinals are going to give you plenty of challenges by what they do. And yeah, he beat up on Washington last week, but it was one of those games where when it rains, it pours, and sometimes when it's going good, it goes really good. But this is going to be a dramatically different challenge for Dak.
Coach, I want to talk about Kyler. And you said, like, everything Dallas needs to do to stop him. I'm kind of worried about the Cardinals stopping themselves. Kyler's got one win since Halloween. It was against the Bears. Obviously, he got hurt. If the Cardinals lose this game, do you think it's a fair comparison to last year's Steelers, where you started off super hot, but a lot of smart football people are just like, we don't really believe in them? Are you ready to write the Cardinals off if they lose this and lose four in a row?
I'm not ready to write them off, but it is one of those things where when you've got momentum, positively or negatively, going into the playoffs, it's pretty powerful, and there is a confidence level that builds up either in a good way or in a bad way in the locker room, where you go into the game thinking, okay, you're waiting for the other shoe to drop and something negative to happen, or you go in with that expectation of all good things are going to happen. And you hate to say that's as real as it is, but it is. And it's powerful. So to add another loss onto this streak and to not play well, I think could be a nail in the coffin for Arizona.
All right, stick around, Coach. We're going to talk Aaron Rodgers, MVP favorite, also talking retirement. Next on First Things First.
I understood their choice to say if you're not going to be fully vaccinated, then you can't be a full participant. And I knew the consequences. I wasn't prepared for them by no stretch of imagination. Coming into the season, I had my thought process on being able to be a full teammate and a full-time teammate and just go out and have fun and provide a sense of a great brand of basketball out there. But unfortunately, it didn't happen like that. Things happened for a reason, and now we're here, and I'm just grateful for this.
Broussard, circle January 5th on your calendar, where the Nets go to Indiana. That might be the first time we see Kyrie. The big question, though, is now that Kyrie is back, Chris, do you think that a part-time Kyrie is actually going to work for the Nets?
I do. And look, I know Nick is going to kill Kyrie because that's what he does. He loves killing Kyrie. But I actually thought I saw a humbler Kyrie in that press conference. His tone of voice was not as abrasive. He said he was grateful for the opportunity to play. He said he understood and respected why the team, told him he couldn't play in road games initially. He didn't call the media pawns. I really thought maybe it's just one time. We'll see if it going forward. But I thought he appeared to be much more humble, which is a good sign for the Nets. Maybe, he's had something he loves taken away from him. But as long as Kevin Durant, James Harden, and the rest of the bunch is on board with this and has the right attitude, I do think this will work. Now, Nick, I was all for what the Nets did earlier in the season because I thought they could win the championship without Kyrie. What I saw over the first few months convinced me they can't win a championship without Kyrie. Unless James Harden we saw over the last two games is the James Harden we're going to get the rest of the year. But James Harden has not played at a high enough level. And the way James Harden has played, Nick, as low as it's been, relatively speaking for him, that actually would be really good if they have Kyrie. James Harden giving them 20, 10, and 8. is great when Kyrie's giving you 25 plus what Kevin Durant does. So I think as long as these guys have the right attitude and the other role players aren't upset about, oh, my minutes, you know, when Kyrie comes in out of the blue, now I'm not getting as many minutes. Look at the makeup of the roster. Patty Mills, Paul Millsap, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge. These guys are there for one reason.
Yeah, sure.
Right. They just want to win. And so I think they'll have the right attitude. And Nick, that makes it a good move.
Yeah, listen, I'm not going to kill Kyrie because that's what I do. I'm just going to stay consistent that I thought this was a bad idea 3 months ago. So I still think it's a bad idea. Just because the Nets were underachieving to the level that you thought they would be at doesn't, to me, make this all of a sudden a good idea. And Wild said January 5th, but I hope Nets fans get used to what we're about to see, because it's also how the season's going to end. So let me explain that, and this is why I think this is a terrible idea for them, Wilds. Show me their upcoming schedule. So Kyrie is obviously not going to be able to play until January 5th. Then he's off for a week until January 12th, and then he's back January 17th. So between now and January 17th, that's two games. And so you might be like, well, what about road trips? Yeah, there'll be road trips. But folks need to look at, Wilds, the end of the next season. The last day of the regular season, Wilds, is April 10th. From March 27th on, there is one game Kyrie can play in at Atlanta. From March 27th to the end of the year, the Nets have two road games, Atlanta and the Knicks. Knicks, you're out for. So we're getting ready for the playoffs. We have a push. Okay, end of March, Kyrie plays one time. Then the season ends. Then there's the play-in. Then there's the first two games of a playoff series. Guess what? Those are in Brooklyn because you're the one or the two seed. So then Kyrie makes a little debut after playing once in a month for two games. And then it's like, okay, we'll see you again in 2 weeks for games 3 and 4 against either Philly or Chicago or Miami or Milwaukee. I am telling you now, that is a disaster. Everyone knows that's not going to work, that Kyrie will play with the team once in the month leading up to the playoffs. Once. That's all he's eligible for. That's not some prognostication. That's the schedule. And they have home court trying to start these series without him. How is that going to work? Someone tell me how that's going to work.
The only counter to that, Broussard. I listened to Kevin Durant's podcast yesterday, and he was talking about how confident he was. And he was so easy and confident that this was going to work. I'm like, you know what? It's like a pilot coming on when you're like, the plane is bouncing around. He's like, we're just going to go up 5,000 feet and be fine. I was like, oh, I feel totally confident now. That's the confidence that Kevin Durant has that this is going to work. So if KD is confident it's going to work and he's got firsthand experience with it and he's going to be the guy doing it, then I think it's going to work, Broussard.
I think that's a great point. And look, KD can play with anybody. You can drop KD on any team and he's going to give you his 30, period. That's the way he plays.
Yep.
Harden is the key. Okay, James Harden is the key. But, Nick, I want to throw this at you. Let's say Kyrie was injured, which obviously isn't that far from the truth. What if he could always be injured? So let's say he was injured and the prospect was Kyrie will be back right for like the third game of the first round of the playoffs. Do you think the Nets would be excited about that? Or would it be, how are we going to, Kyrie hadn't played all year. He's only played 10 games.
But that's not fair.
21
games. He's going to be back.
I mean, I'm just asking.
Re-aggravate the injury every 4 days. He's going to be back and then out and then back and then out and then back and then out. It's
okay.
Not starting
but
in
if
the playoffs,
that was the case, would they take that? Say, you know what? Since you're going to keep re-aggravating it, don't come back. No, they would take it.
Yeah,
unless Harden becomes the Houston Harden again, then I'm all right.
It'll be fun to watch.
I'm telling you, it's going to work.
I'm going to be right again.
That's fine.
I like being right, so it's fine.
Again? When was the last time?
Yeah, about the Nets last year.
This guy.
Oh, I called that one, buddy.
Baby Goat playing Trevor Lawrence. Is he going to end up on the Bud list? Better not. Coming up next. First things first.
Are we still calling him?
Stories to start your morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve. Lakers in Memphis last night. looking to extend their winning streak to two. Didn't happen. Ja Morant, most electrifying man in sports entertainment, had 41. LeBron had 8 threes, tied his career high, went for 37, 13, and 7. In the end, didn't matter. Lakers lose again. Broussard, is there anything the Lakers can do to get right?
What they really need to do, Wilds, is hop into a time machine. You know, I'm serious. You remember all those jokes, all those memes about, oh, they're building the 2013 All-Star team. Everybody laughed. LeBron got mad. Keep that same energy. Please keep that same energy. They were true. They were right. The team is old, and this is a problem. All right, you get everybody wants to blame Russ, and there's certainly blame to go there. Everybody wants to blame AD. Yes, he deserves. So everybody deserves some blame except LeBron. Let's just keep it real. And the coaching staff deserves blame too. But these boys are old. All right, and when you're older, you have a trouble staying at a high level of play. That's why you see these peaks and valleys, Nick, with the Lakers almost in every game. All right. Sometimes in the game, they look great. Wow. They got it humming. The ball is moving. Russ and LeBron got some chemistry. They look great. And then 6 minutes later, they look horrible. Can't stay in front of anybody. Can't make a shot. Not moving because they're old and they lead the league, Nick. This happened last night too. They lead the league in blown double digit leads in losses. So they've led 9 games this year by double figures and lost. It's because they are old.
That's all so right?
And
bad.
And that's the problem. It's terrible. So I'm going to quickly, one, they need to slow things down. They don't need to be the fastest team in the league and the oldest team in the league. Wilds, I know you think that old fogies should play at breakneck pace. Let's run. Run opportunistically, but slow it down a little bit. LeBron's always played on slow teams anyway. That's when he's at his best. Let him control the game. And then two, Nick, and this is, you got to be careful with how you do it, but they need to slowly, subtly get Russ off the floor late in the game. Maybe not every time. Maybe this won't work, or maybe you go back to Russ later in the season. But right now, I want to see like LeBron and maybe Avery Bradley, Malik Monk, maybe Carmelo, because they can shoot, and Stanley Johnson because he can defend. On the floor with LeBron at the end of a game until AD gets back. Put shooters around him. Russ's lack of decision-making or poor decision-making, his lack of a jump shot, and now his inability to finish at the rim is hurting them late in game. So those are the things I would want to fix these Lakers. Yeah.
Listen, I think in some circles, Russ has gotten a little too much of the blame. This is not all on Russ. Russ wasn't the one playing DeAndre Jordan. Russ isn't THT, who I think one day will be a good player, but shooting 22% from three, who after his opening few games of the season has been just a disaster on the offensive end. Everything is not Russ's fault. But last night, a lot of it was Russ's fault. And last night, there are a few sequences in the fourth quarter that just make you go crazy. So here's Ja Morant at the free throw line. The Lakers are down one. There's 6.5 minutes left. And there's Russ knocking the ball away from his own teammate who would have had the rebound. And now all of a sudden it's Grizzlies ball and boom. Now it's a 4-point game. So Russ's overactivity there, he's trying to help. It leads to that. And then Russ next time down. Okay, and now all of a sudden it's going to be Memphis up 7 the next time they have the ball. But a few minutes later, LeBron claws him back. And I think we can show you LeBron's three here in just a moment. This is a little confusing how the video's running. But there's the Russ turnover, and then this whole sequence is a disaster. But LeBron does claw them back. They're down 6. LeBron in Ja Morant's eye. Okay? All right, now what's going to happen? You need to stop. You need a stop and a score. There's a couple minutes left. You're down 3. LeBron gets you the stop. And now let's watch. You have got to be kidding me. That can't happen. That can't happen at this level or the level below or the level below. So Wilds, like, this is not all on Russ, but he is killing them late in games. And last night was a vintage example of it. And I don't disagree with Broussard that the right basketball move right now might be to get him off the court in crunch time. But I don't think that's a viable. Then you just have to trade him. I don't know, like, trade him for what and for who. Because I don't think that's going to sit well with anybody.
No, I think ego-wise, that is tough for any coach to try to deliver that message to Russ. But, Broussard, I want to talk about Russ's athleticism. His decision-making has always been questioned going back to Thunder days. But his athleticism was never in doubt, ever. Except last night when you saw him against Ja Morant. Ja Morant tried to dunk on Dwight Howard basically in front of the free throw line. You're like, oh my gosh, you really going to try to do that? Then Ja Morant was consistently blowing by Russ. But not like, I know Russ is not the all defense, but you could stay in front of guys, and Ja Morant was waltzing past him. And then there's this. That missed layup was like a, I'm going to dunk it, maybe I'll lay it in. And when you marry that to what happened on Christmas, when he's like, ah, I think I can dunk this one rather than laying it in. To me, I'm not saying he's washed by any stretch. But do you think he just lost a tenth of a step, an eighth of a step? And has that gone into his psyche of how he finishes around the rim, Broussard?
Interesting point, Wiles, and I want to get to that. But first, let me talk about it, trying to get Russ out of the game at crunch time, because you guys are right. I mean, that could be a deal breaker, right? It's hard to tell Russ that. That's why I don't think you're telling. I think subtly, and you're playing a game, and you got your second unit players in, and it's going well. It's going well, and you keep it going, and you don't put Russ back in like you usually do late, right? Because, hey, it was working. And you win that game, and you know what? It was working. That's why it was nothing against Russ. We just had it going with this unit. We kept it. And that's how you kind of subtly do it. I get it. It's tough. But that is an issue that they have to deal with. But, Wiles, to your point, I don't think Russ has lost a ton of athleticism by any stretch. He still plays with high energy, and he does have bounce still. The missed dunk on Christmas Day, I think it was people were a little bit unfair to Russ. Yes, he got hung up on the rim. But it wasn't like a wide open dunk where he just didn't have the ups. He had to maneuver his way around Nick Claxton. They were actually, look at this. There's two nets there. So he's got to kind of go around Claxton. I think that's who it is. And that's why he kind of got hung up on the rim.
But Thunder Russ,
it wasn't as bad as people thought. That's all I'm saying. Okay, yes. I feel
Thunder
you,
Russ,
but it wasn't as bad as people say. What I give you, Wiles, is this. He's lost a smidge. And if he's lost a smidge, that means a lot in the NBA. And now those plays at the rim where you weren't even worried about the defender, now you're thinking a little more. Is this guy going to get this shot? Is he going to get his hand on this? And that can affect the way you finish or even the way you take contested jump shots. So I do think you make a good point, and maybe it is entering his psyche, because these layups, Nick, that he's missing in several of these games recently, it's just there's no explanation for why in the world a Hall of Fame player who's been a good finisher in his career is missing this stuff.
Oh, I think he's in his own head a bit. I think that's undeniable. I know Russ did the press conference and puffed his chest out and said, I'm over it. You know, people want me to go 25, 15, and 15. I'm going to be me. I think he's absolutely in his own head a bit. And on one of those missed layups yesterday, he started looking at his hands like the old Freddie. Yeah. You guys remember Freddie Mitchell? Fred X? You know, why have my hand? Yeah, I think Stevie Johnson did it too. A couple mediocre NFL wide receivers. The why have my hands forsaken me after a big drop? Russ was doing that, after one of these layups. Like, what is going on? So maybe he does need something of a hard reset. But here's why this is so disastrous for the Lakers. Broussard, if I said to you that Kevin Durant is the league MVP this year, would you have a big argument with that? Would you agree with it, or at least say that I have a very strong case?
It's not. Agree? Yeah, it's not. Exactly. You got a strong case. Yes, strong case.
Okay, Durant. I think if there's voting right now, Durant probably would win. Giannis would get some votes. Steph would get some votes. There would be a few algorithms that voted for Jokic, but no actual human beings. But it would probably be Durant. Can we put up Durant's numbers next to LeBron's? And so, look at that. Durant's averaging one more bucket. LeBron's averaging one more assist. The percentages are nearly identical. So here's why this is a disaster for the Lakers. Broussard, are the Nets some young, spry team? No. Have the Nets been the bastion of consistency unaffected by injury and COVID? No. Has the Nets' secondary star in James Harden been a superstar? No. Has the Nets' third star, their version of Russ, been great? No, he hasn't played. He actually has not played in Kyrie Irving. The Nets are the one seed. The Nets have the best record in the East. The Nets are like 22-7. I don't have the record. That's not the record. They've played more games than that. But they're the one seed. The Lakers are a game under 500. A couple games under 500. That's why it's a disaster. LeBron is playing at a, statistically speaking, Broussard, MVP level. He's not going to play that well all year. And they've lost 5 of 6. That's the disaster for them, Broussard.
No, you're right. Look, I don't think LeBron's playing as great as the numbers suggest. The numbers suggest he's still in his prime, all right? Because defensively he's not the same, and obviously he's not impacting winning as much. But you are right. He's playing terrifically, and the fact that they're losing against a weak schedule. Remember, weak schedule so far is scary, nightmarish for Lakers fans. Wilds, they look like they're in trouble.
Hey, happy birthday, LeBron. Try to end it on a high note.